6:33. Welcome to the June 2012 Lamont Rise Advisory Council meeting. I am now calling the meeting to order. First up is the public comment period. John, do we have anyone that wants to give a public comment this evening?
We have two people. The first person, we'll just go alphabetically, I guess, is Chris Barnes.
My name's Chris Barnes, and I'm also known as Mitchell Motto on Twitter. Thank you for allowing me 2 minutes of your time tonight. First, I'd like to ask the council for clarification on a remark made by the council chair at last month's meeting. She said these were executive sessions. It's my understanding that the writers' council does not have executive sessions. Also, I'd like to review four parts of the council bylaws, and I'd like you to revisit and give further consideration as I feel they've been overlooked. Article 2B, goals of the writers' council number 2. Encourage writer awareness of the writers' council and of the opportunities that the council provides for writers to make their voices heard. Number 3, seek input from a broad range of Metro writers. Where is this being done and why not through social media channels? Article 2C, responsibilities. Number 3, hold public forums with a special focus on an issue, geographical location, or targeted group as necessary to respond to writers' concerns. When was the last time this happened, and why not after a recent derailment at Fair Heights? Article 6A, regular meetings. A, members of the public have the right and should be solicited by the Writers' Council to attend and directly address the council on any item on the agenda that is within its subject matter before or during consideration of an item. As a member of the public, I read this to mean meeting formats should be more like the AAC meetings, which allow public interaction during discussion. Please consider how the Writers' Council may be adjusted to better meet these bylaws. Thank you for your time.
Thanks for your comments, and I guess I would respond. Let me just clarify now. I did not say that, I don't recall saying that they were executive sessions. I think I said this is like an executive session for us, meaning that it's not close to the public, and we definitely encourage the public to attend and spend time on behalf of the shore, allocate the proper amount of time to get our work done, while at the same time balancing the needs and hearing from our writers. As to your other points, you're in luck tonight because we're actually going to discuss a lot of points that you just brought up in our agenda item 9, RAC outreach. So we'll stick around and listen to what we have to
do. I was hoping to provide the public side of those shared points. Okay. Thank you for your response, Dr. Shaw.
John, one more?
Actually, we have two more now. 2 of 3 is Kurt Rashke.
Hi, thank you for your time tonight. As I hope you are aware, last week the National Transportation Safety Board released 3 reports and incidents on the Metro Rail system, one of which resulted in the deaths of track workers Jeff Gerard and Sun O. I would hope that the RAC would request a presentation from a lot of the for safety in the wake of these accidents. But even more importantly, I would hope that the RAC would ask Mata to publicly release documents from an independent verification and oversight of the authorities' claims on safety. I understand that the RAC is not accustomed to conducting independent investigations, but Jeff Gerard, Sun O, their colleagues, and the 1.5 million individuals who use Metro every day, I ask you to consider the vital importance of holding the law accountable on such a serious issue of safety. Thank you.
Thanks. Any questions or comments for our public comment? Okay, none.
And then 3 of 3 is Maxine Nightingale Starling.
Oh, okay.
As a resident of Ward 7, we have many concerns.
I'm sorry, is your microphone on?
I'll start again. Good evening, and thank you for the opportunity to address the assembly this evening. My name is Maxine Nightingale Starling. I'm a Ward 7 resident, and we have many concerns concerning the Metro system in our area of the East Capitol Street, Alabama Avenue, as well as several other areas of Minnesota Avenue. And what the constituency is concerned with is the frequency of buses, the cleanliness of the buses. We have an ever-increasing handicap population that The bus routes that we have, U5, U6, W4, U8, we need many more buses during the AM and PM because of the high ridership. We're also very much interested in having the board to come to the Capital View Civic Association in September. That would be Monday the 17th at 7 p.m. to address these particular issues and other concerns of the area residents. Thank you very much for your cooperation, and if you have any questions, I'm more than happy to address them. The evening of Monday the 17th for the Capital View Civic Association, I can assure you that you would have a very high attendance, more than 150 residents. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us, and thank you for your comments. It's important that we hear from communities such as yours, as well as others in the tribe jurisdictional area that have a monitor. I think some of us who take the bus a bit more frequently than the train very well resonate with your concerns about crowding, and we also recognize that there are things that maybe the council can do, or at least recommendations that perhaps it can make, or maybe make ourselves just available to listen to those types of thoughts and comments from the back of our minds. This is actually not the first time we've had a group come to us and ask for us to present or to be a part of the meeting, and so I think that there should be no problem with us attending if we are available. Some of us at least.
If I could just, Ms. Starling, just to keep on track for that meeting, if you could just see me afterwards, give me your contact information, so that.
I have one question. It has come into my attention that there is going to be a project at the Denning Road Metro Station. Could you give me some more insight? Yeah, that information I received, and it's supposed to be an 18-month project. Is this correct?
I'm not aware of anything. I can check and get back in touch with you. Do you know, I mean, when you say a project, do you mean like a metro project or like a construction of a building at the site?
All of the above.
Okay.
It's supposed to take place sometime during the month of June, and it's supposed to be an 18-month project to improve the site itself.
I'll see what I can find out. I'm not aware of anything, but that certainly does not mean it's not happening.
Thank you.
Okay.
Ms. Nightingale, I have one more question for you. Did you mind letting us know you found out about this meeting?
Through the internet, and then we have a social group that stays on top of our meeting at ANC Commissioner for 1707, attending many of our meetings, community meetings in various areas of Ward 7. They contact me, and I'm glad to give my phone number to the assembly here for further questions. And that number would be
203-273-4. Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else tonight from the public that would like to speak up or in public commentary? I saw we had a few people walk in. Sorry, I'm not sorry. Please finish. I'm sorry. Thank you. So to those that just walked in, is anyone else here from the public commentary? Hearing no one else, I'm going to go on to the approval.
Without objection. That's fine.
Great. The next agenda item is approval of past meeting minutes, but it just was brought to my attention that the May 24th meeting minutes were just distributed tonight. So I don't think it's fair to ask folks to be able to further review them and then vote on approving these minutes. So we will wait until next month. Okay. All right, the next agenda item, we have a presentation from WMATA staff on smart trip pricing and rule changes by Mr. Adam McGavin. Did I say that correctly?
Yes.
Okay.
Very good, thank you.
Thank you, welcome.
Hi.
So, my name is Adam McGavin. I'm the director of customer service for sales and fair media here at WMATA. I have been asked to come give you a briefing on some upcoming changes and enhancements to the smart trip system. Try to go through this quickly so we have time for your questions and comments. We'll start with a change to the entry and exit rules. Currently, if you have zero balance on your smart trip card, you can enter the rail system, take a trip, go negative up to $5 on that card. Starting in September, there's going to be a minimum entry requirement. So you will have to have the minimum fare on your card in order to board the system. This is going to reduce the amount of negative value the riders can carry. I can't really get into great detail about the thinking behind this, but that's the upshot of the change that's going to occur. Anyone has any questions on that? That was pretty straightforward.
Did you want to open up your presentation before opening up the...
No, I'm fine. I didn't want to ask questions because sometimes people forget.
Okay, that's fine.
I know I do.
All right, that's
a good
question. Go ahead. Just a quick question. Is that going to be for rail only or will it also apply to bus?
That is on rail only.
I'm sorry, I'm not getting one already.
You can call me out.
Okay, I'm getting one. Does the change in fair media that you did for the board already approve that?
Yes.
Already.
Correct. Okay, the next item, that last one wasn't exactly a pleasant thing for writers. I'm hoping the next couple would be a little more happy items here. We're going to lower the price effectively that people pay for a smart trip card. Currently, you pay $5 for a smart trip card. We generally sell with $5 of value preloaded. Now, we'd love to go ahead and just say, okay, from now on, we're selling for $1 or $2. But because of our business rules, okay, our current business rules, you can take that card with zero value and take a $5 trip on it and throw it in the trash and buy a brand new card on your next trip and take a $5 trip on it and throw it in the trash. We're out $6. We also run out of cards a lot quicker. Okay. It's, some people call it gaming the system. You know, no one's breaking any rules. I would just say taking advantage of the system. So, how do we lower the price of the cards without exposing ourselves to that kind of loss? Because not only do you lose the value of the trip, but if we start burning through cards real quickly, we have to buy a lot more cards, we have to visit the dispensers a lot more frequently, there's a lot more expenses involved than just the price of the card. So here's what we're going to do. Price of the cards at the dispenser will not change. However, when you register that card, link it to go to a web account, create, it's very simple. You create your web account and register your card at the same time. You will get an email that says, congratulations, you are now eligible for a $3 rebate on the price of your card. Use your card within 5 business days, $3 will be auto-loaded to your card. So you'll get $3 of the purchase price back. On one hand, we're effectively reducing the price of the card. An added benefit, I think, is getting people to try auto-load, registering for a website account. We're also increasing the card registrations. I think a lot more people will register with an incentive. Question.
How can people who don't have access to the internet still get the discount?
Well,
or the preloaded rebate, whatever.
Yeah, I think, well, for example, I mean,
can they call the customer service line and get it that way?
No, it would have to be done online. I mean, people do generally have access to public computers, for example. The other thing, I've tried it on smartphones. I mean, I do realize there are plenty of people out there who don't have internet access, but a lot of people do have smartphones, and you can go in and register with a smartphone. You don't need to use a credit card. You just need to visit the website and create an account.
I'm sorry. I think that what you're saying sounds great. I would be good. I don't think that people in some of our core communities in D.C. or in Prince George's County, just because that's my experience, I can speak about the other region, will get this or will take advantage of it. And the years, it really sounds like if we're saying an advantage for people who regularly use these things already. So I hope that when this gets going.
This would be coming in September. I would also add, too, in the past, we have distributed usually 25 or 30,000 at the time. We've distributed smart trip cards to social service agencies to hand out to people with lower incomes free of charge.
What I'm talking about is connecting them to, the website and getting the discount. And I'm getting the point that you're talking about. I get the point that you're talking about, but there's still, because that speaks to this population at Metro, at Carol Kissel, having to do good. And Carol Kissel has talked about many times when she's come to speak here about serving the unbanked population.
Right.
This sounds like just kind of going in the opposite direction.
Well, as I said, I think we would be able, if we're directed to, for example, if the board directs us to do this, we can distribute smart trip cards free of charge to that unbanked population so that there wouldn't be any issues with registration or anything else.
Can I
just one minute? That we're offering people who have the ability doesn't mean that we're still not addressing the community that you spoke about. I think we had a meeting with Patrick yesterday and and we talked about this community and how we can still resolve it. And one of the things that we're exploring and doing, Adam's working with the social service agencies. Right now, the way it works is we distribute free cards to the social service agency, and then they deliver them to their clients. It doesn't really work very well in the past because they can't add value, they don't register the cards, they don't track them. So what Adam is going to work with the social service agencies is we're going to give them the cards, the social service agencies can register them, and put value on them for the program that he's working on. And then they can actually offer that smart trip to the folks who need it. And the billing will be between Metro and the social service agencies, not necessarily with the client. And additionally, what we talked about yesterday was trying to connect smart trip cards for unbanked people to something that is already banked. For example, if you're on the bank wire, and you are associated with Medicare or some other program, we can actually work with that other program where you get your benefits and connect some type of benefit between Metro and that provider in terms of growing the value of providing that benefit. And so these are ways that we're exploring trying to provide for the community that is on the bank and still having them able to use this smart trip card. As well as
so I think that we thank you. We recognize there's this need. It sounds like very quickly the council recognized this. So I ask in your remarks too, if you have suggestions, I believe that's what the staff is coming for. So we have about 15 minutes left in this presentation, but I'm going to go around the room here. We've got 1, 2, 3, and then we'll end with Carol. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, let's just do the questions related to this.
I think this was going to be the one that inspired the most questions.
Okay, all right, let's go around here with these four. Candy,
Steve,
Carol.
Okay, my question is, have you thought about maybe doing anything in conjunction with like community centers and the libraries and the community to sort of notify people that this rebate is available, that, you know, if they go in any of these centers, maybe they can use the computers there to register and things like that? That may be helpful because I know when I go to the library in my community, it's usually packed with people. So they know when they're walking in, hey, I have my smart trip card here, I can just register on one of these computers. You might be able to get the word out a little bit better.
That's a great idea. We'll put that in our app. Mm-hmm.
What's the name of the candidate? 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 What's the name of the candid
to really sort of get that kind of feedback and stuff. Because they're not aware of communication, communication.
Carolyn, I was wondering, can you go back and talk about the, you have to do something within 5 business days? Why do you have to do that?
No, it's essentially, you don't have to do anything within 5 business days. Once you link that card, register it, and link it to a website account, which is one-step process, essentially, you go online to the website, you create your account, register the card at the same time, then within 5 days, you get the rebate. But there's no time limitation on you. Got a lot of time to make.
Will the new cards have a prominent display on the front that says register for a $3 discount at Walmart.com? And is that an option?
Put it on the actual card?
Yeah, I mean, if the social service agency is handing these things out, are they going to come up with a user manual that says, make sure you do XYZ?
I would definitely say if we're providing them to a social service agency, then yes, we would include materials with it, urging us, notifying them of the rebate program, and then urging them to register their cards.
And likewise, you know, I think if people buy them in machines, I could very easily see someone walking up to a machine, being in a $5 bill, and walking away, not even registering it. They should go online, but someday when they put on board in a meeting, looking through their wallet for something to do, and they see that, you know, that's a reminder. I would encourage you to support some form of.
Yeah, it's a little more difficult with the dispensers, but that's something, at the very least, we're going to try to have some sort of signage at the dispensers notifying folks of that.
One of the things that in our discussions with Carol and General Manager and AEAP yesterday, we're going to be giving to them, sharing back and forth with them some of the addresses that the Office of Eligibility and the Office of AEAP has as far as the community goes and social service organizations. We're looking at a population, I think we said about 10%, that could be really affected by this, that are that are using the bus and that are maybe disadvantaged. And they have a difficult time with this. So we want to track to see how much of that population is will be helped by social service agencies helping them to register the cards. And I think the general manager had one more point, was that he wanted to then go out to the community themselves and to survey the community and ask them, you know, we've done X, we've done Y, we've done Z to try to narrow the gap from 10% to a smaller gap. Where else can be effective? So I think going out to the community and interviewing them personally would be a good thing. One of the things that my committee was concerned about was that the use of or other media, you're going to be charged more money for using that because of the won't be getting the invention of smart credit card. So we want to try to reduce, let's say, the use of cash or other media so that you can get the benefit of use of the smart credit card and get the deductions that that card will offer without disadvantaging the population that might be more disadvantaged.
We have one more question on this point, and we've got 13 minutes left to get to the last 2 initiatives.
I'll speak quick.
Okay, so Carl, and then
I assume when you guys are distributing cards, you know, they have serial numbers registered. Is there a way or do you plan to track so you can say, well, the 100 cards we gave to Agency X still haven't been used, but the 100 cards we gave to Agency Y have all checked into the system within 5 days? Is that something you plan to do to ensure that social service agencies are accountable for what is the gift, quote unquote, from the mom?
We won't be able to track it in the way that you're saying because we don't actually, it's The smart trip cards don't actually have sequential serial numbers. There's reasons for that, which I don't want to waste your time going into. But, for example, when we do give out cards to social service agencies, we do follow up with them repeatedly to find out, have you distributed them? Did you need more? Do you want to, do you need to give these back? Are you having trouble finding takers for them? Because there's usually someone else who does want them.
Okay.
So we will be following up with them.
Just making sure they're in and under the trash can or something like that.
Social services wanted the rebate on it because they didn't pay for the cards, right?
Whomever registers the cards will get the registration rebate. But actually, if we're giving them to them for free, then no, they would not get the rebate. If we're distributing them for free, no.
So let's go on to your third and fourth.
Okay. The third point, this is another fairly straightforward, easy one. One of the things that customers have complained about, and I complained about before I worked here, was that it is difficult to get a smart trip card. A lot of folks don't want to take the time to go to Metro Center or some of these other stations. Now, we rectified that a little bit back in 2004 by putting dispensers in stations with parking. We did that because we had cashless parking. You needed a smart trip card to exit the parking areas. Starting in September, we will have dispensers selling smart trip cards in every rail station. And the hope is that that's going to make it easier for folks to buy the cards and increase the market penetration, which right now is about 82% on rail. Any questions on that?
I have. So as we heard during public comment period, in the community that I live in, there's a large part of the population that does not use the rail system or uses the carrier frequent stations to use the bus.
Right.
So will there be any dispensers popular or place areas with large bus populations, major bus transport points, so they can still be sheltered from the elements, but folks don't have to go downtown or they don't have to approach substations to obtain their bus.
We do have about 400 sales outlets where you can buy smart trip cards, such as CVS, Giant, Safeway, and places such as that, that are pretty convenient to most of the bus lines. I don't know of any plans to site dispensers at bus station, but that is certainly something I can take away from this meeting.
Okay, I would like to ask to then. So again, the presentation Adam's going to give on Thursday, there's a map, he could probably give it to you, Metro map, and then it's got all bus routes on it, and then it has all of the places where we have dispensed marshal cards. And it's populated with these 400 locations. So we would love for you guys to look at that map, specifically in your community, as you discussed, and you can identify where we may need more family solutions. We would love to get that feedback from you. So if he can give you that back, he can probably email it to you.
Okay.
That'd
be
great.
Thank you. Okay, so let's start with Victoria then, and then work our way around the table.
I would just say, again, advertising more that you can buy the sponsorship cards with other outlets. I always say I know this, and I thought it was common knowledge, but constantly I hear from people saying they didn't know you could just go to CVS or Giant. So, yeah, I think you need the public to that more too.
And I just want to add to that. Two places in particular that these should be sold are at Dulles Airport and EW Monty. Not only at where the 5A and the E30 go, but also at the information kiosks, at the newspaper stands there. I think for tourists especially, that should be something that they're
My comment is that one of the places that I suggest, and I'm just throwing this out there,
would be some of the libraries in the North 7 and the 8. I'm actually going to get a library, but also, I think that maybe just a few months, if it's possible to be done, just work with the area on government agencies and put kiosks there. Put kiosks at the local building or at district court and maybe at places where people may go and take the bus to go to. Municipal Center over in Hyattsville, places that people only take the bus to report on families because that is a huge population of people who take the bus at 8.
I know that are the smart trip vending locations also identified on the local region maps on bus stations, or are they only on kind of the master bus map that's online?
That I don't know.
So then if I'm saying it,
yeah, I
don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I'm talking about the map that stops.
Right, this is very specific to the area.
Yeah, no, I don't believe that.
It's a good suggestion.
Yeah, I think that would be great, so that if you're standing waiting, you have 20 minutes after going on Xbox, and it's working, of course, you can run to the CVS that's on the map that says, buy it here.
Yeah, good suggestion.
Okay.
Yes, I just have one comment. As we talked about Giants and CVS, we have to make, when we said that, all Giants and all CVSs have this program. For example, in my case, in my neighborhood, I have two Giants close to me. Neither one of them has it. The one that I investigated and the one over 2 miles away from me. And we have to either, I don't know if this is something that has to be done with the Giants, but to get them more stores or to the CVS, etc., to get more stores involved. Because at the same time that you're providing the service, it's just localized in some areas, not to everybody.
This is absolutely true. And we do have trouble with store managers sometimes, too. We had to actually pull some of the reloading machines out of CVS. Because the store managers were telling customers that they were broken because they didn't feel like providing that service. And so we actually had to pull out a couple of CVS. They hadn't done a single sale in 9 months. And it was costing us money for the phone line during the month. But you make an excellent point. It isn't all CVS. I would also point out there's 400 places to buy the cards. There are 250 locations where you can buy the cards and reload with the point of sale machine. But you make an excellent point. And we are trying to increase our
network.
So we have time for one more comment, and
then we've got 5 minutes for your enforcement. Steph? Have you publicly updated the website and the market? Well, I mean, for those people who want to go and buy
a card. Oh, absolutely, absolutely. If you go to the Lombardo website, if you go to smarttrip.com, it's a pretty ugly little website for the Smart Trip program, but it's very simple, and there's about 10 menu choices right there, and the middle one is where do I load value and purchase a Smart Trip card, and that'll take you to a link where you can put in your zip code or your city name, you can put in Arlington or Isola, and it'll bring up a map and show you the locations on the map where you can purchase and or reload your Smart Trip card.
And your fourth point?
Yes. Fourth point, this is something we've been working on for a long time. This is what we call threshold auto load. Any of you who use EasyPass are familiar with this. You would go onto the website account, you would say, here's my card that I've registered. I want you to put $20 on this card, and when the value on the card falls below, say, $15, $20, or $10, I want you to charge this credit card and add $20 to the card. So what that basically does is, if you're a regular rider, you really no longer have to worry about keeping money on your card or ever visiting a ticket vending machine and standing in line. Essentially, your card is on autopilot at that point. Question?
Sorry. Hello. Is it true that it takes 24 hours for the value to appear on the card after you load it online?
No. This is an excellent question. This is. What we have is a card-based system. In other words, the money has to actually get to your card. Okay? And so, for example, EasyPass, the money goes into an account somewhere. They see your pass, they go charge that account. Here at Lumada, it has to go on your card. That's because we put this system in place in 1996. So things like cloud computing, high-speed data, they weren't real popular back then. So, yes, on the rail system, we do tell people it takes up to 24 hours for the auto load to be there waiting for you at the station. I can tell you from personal experience, I've tested a lot of auto loads over at Judiciary Square. It's usually there within the hour. But just to be safe, we tell people that it will take up to 24 hours for that to reach your car.
When you say auto load, do you mean the recurring?
Currently, right now, you can go on the website, register, create a website account, register your card, link to that account, and say, load $50 onto my card. And then when you go to the rail station, tap a target anywhere in the system, that money will get onto your card. That takes, we tell people that takes up to 24 hours. Most times it's much faster than that.
Yes. two minutes left for this agenda item, I want to make sure we can get to the other three that have comments. Go on.
Yeah, it seems like every day in the paper you read that the most sophisticated systems in the world get hacked, and all of a sudden, hundreds of thousands of credit card numbers are out there. And when that happens, there's a huge financial impact on the institution that has that happen, and to track people's credit cards and do all kinds of things like that. And as I understand it, the difference between using your card and using your credit card loan now and this is you would have the standing credit card numbers in your system. And my question is WMATA prepared? Are you either, number one, very confident that you can't get hacked, which I can't imagine because everybody gets hacked, and number two, are you prepared to meet the financial burden that you'll have if it gets hacked?
What I can say is we are subject to payment card industry or PCI audits on an annual basis, and they have extremely restrictive requirements on how credit card information is stored. We are doing everything we can do to ensure security, but no, I cannot guarantee you that we won't get hacked. And to your other question about are we financially prepared for any aftermath, I can't really speak to that.
Ben?
Two quick points. One, can we get these smart trip cards free?
What?
Can we get them free?
Oh.
And even more so, can we make them collectible? I'm just thinking about branding for DC tourism. I mean, it's nice to have a nice metro car on there. It would be great to have a Capitol Dome edition, a Washington Monument edition, just about there for tourists again. Yeah, exactly.
In answer to your question, yes, we do. We do cards for special events. We do some collectible cards. I think we're just now running out of the Obama inauguration cards.
The cherry blossoms.
The cherry blossoms, yeah. As a matter of fact, if we weren't right on the verge of a new card procurement, they were going to have some really beautiful cherry blossom cards with the Peter Max graphic this year, and unfortunately, we weren't able to do that. But yes, my hope is that we do a lot of them for special edition graphics. I'm a card nerd, so I love that sort of thing.
My other, perhaps more relevant point for writers, since you're in the process of changing the exit and entry rules, could you please at least consider putting into place something that writers have long advocated for, which is if you go into the rail system, find that the next train is half an hour, 45 minutes away, or that the sign just says train, and you exit the system, you should not be charged for that trip. Since you're, again, working on the entry exit rules, I've been told before that it's a technical issue, complex, et cetera, but since you're already delving into that, can we make that part of the equation as well?
That's certainly, I can tell you that's certainly something that's being looked at. We have heard, I get a lot of complaints, and that's definitely something we need to, I don't think people should be charged a minimum fare for entering an accident within 5 minutes. And so that's, essentially, it would be a matter of determining the time period that we would be allowing folks. If I said 5 minutes, I don't know if that would be the exact case, but that would also be something I come back and talk to all of you about. But yes, that is certainly something we're looking
at. But is that something that could be implemented as part of this?
In September?
Yeah, as part of this tranche. Because again, with all the track work going on, especially now, it's even more relevant.
Yeah. I can't really make any promises in that regard. I wouldn't be too optimistic for September. I'm trying to be as honest as I can with you folks. There's a ton of other initiatives going on that are really eating up a lot of programming and technical staff time. But I can tell you that is something I'm looking at.
Thanks, Joseph.
That does not mean that you have to have those, what you're saying is you can fill them entering the system with a negative balance.
No. What we're doing is we're requiring minimum entry, but for example, if you have $1.70 on your card, you can still take a $5 trip.
So, let me finish my question. Here's my question. If I can't, the question was, at first it was, you allow them to enter the system, they name the amount. So, if we didn't do that, if we didn't charge this huge thing, then it would be a cash loss for the system. So, according to what you just said, is that we're not going to allow people to enter the system with negative balances, right?
And you can enter with zero.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
You're getting me, right?
Yeah, no, I understand.
And you have to have money on your card then, right?
Yes.
Okay, so if you have to have money on your card, then what's the point of the later rebate?
Of the registration rebate?
Yes.
It is going to requiring minimum entry reduces the exposure, but it doesn't completely eliminate it. Eliminating negative balance would eliminate the exposure, and that's something that's being looked at, and this could be considered maybe a first step towards that.
Okay, so I think you just explained to me something that makes sense to me. Well, it doesn't make sense to me, but I understand now. You're funny.
Okay.
So, Mr. McGrath, we want to thank you for coming and being with us, and we hope that suggestions and comments you gave today were helpful and useful to you. And if you need anything else from us, please feel free to contact us again and we'll see what we can do.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
So at the end of this presentation, before we start our next application, I see some members of the public that look like new faces. And so I wanted to let you know, and I think I saw someone that raised their hand. I wanted to let you know that generally and traditionally, the RAC has not allowed public comments or questions or suggestions from members of the public during our staff presentation. The RAC actually has on our agenda tonight to discuss this as a public outreach, a way of better engage the public and include them in our meetings. We have not yet decided how we're going to handle that. I say all that to say that while we're not going to be able to allow your questions tonight after the staff presentation, if a staffer like Mr. McGavitt that just walked out the door has something else that you want to know, I suggest you follow up with them and pull his coattail or her coattail and see what information they can provide to you personally. And so, my experience, I will not staff is extremely helpful. Okay, so moving on to our next presentation, we have Mr. Jim Hamry, who's going to speak to us about youth outreach. And before Mr. Hamry gets started, I actually want to go ahead and convince him and his office, and his staff, actually came to the RAC about a month ago and did something that I think the RAC asked and actually put forth in a report to the board, which was to allow staff to come to the RAC at the beginning of initiatives instead of in the middle or at the tail end when decisions have already been made. So that's what Mr. Henry's going to do with us tonight. He's coming to us at the beginning with a proposal to get our input and maybe map out a framework as to how we can work together over the next few months. So welcome, Mr. Henry.
Good evening, everyone. Nice to be back to visit with you. I want to introduce Julie Hirschhorn, who's our manager of service planning in the Office of Busing. And her staff are the folks that actually determine where buses go and schedules and frequency and all that sort of thing. And as part of our initiative that was approved by the Metro Board to make investments in our priority corridor network and improve the state of good operations for our bus services, there's an opportunity for us to follow up on what turns out to be one of your initiatives, as well as an ongoing item of concern that has been expressed to us by our customers and residents around the region in more than 130 public meetings that we've held during our corridor and service planning, is that they've asked us to do five things. One, make sure the service works as promised. Two, if something's not working, fix it. Three, if it's not working, communicate about it. Four, deal with nuisance customers and safety matters. And five, foster good relations with the bus operators. One of the oft-mentioned issues that our riders face are behavior of students on buses, whether it be as sponsored trips or general trips. As we know, sometimes students have more energy than do their parents, and And when you're all bunched together, sometimes shoulder to shoulder in a crowded bus, these can be issues that raise the ire, raise concern, and frankly, don't create the conducive environment that we're trying to achieve for bus ridership. We also, as part of particular opportunity with the District of Columbia public school system, we transport about 12,000 or 11,000 students a day for the public schools on the Metro bus. And that's an important function that we're pleased to be able to do for the community. And in some cases, we have special additional buses assigned to provide capacity for the high schools and junior highs and whatnot. And then in addition to that, there's the Montgomery County Kids Ride Free program after 2 p.m. On weekdays, they can, students with valid IDs can ride in the county for free. And according to our surveys, it's somewhere between 20 and 30,000 students a day on the Metro bus system, which represents maybe 8%, 7 or 8% of our total ridership. So it's an important function, and what we have been recognizing as we go through our forward planning and then develop implementation plans is that everything we used to know, we don't necessarily know now. Some of the practices that we used to have, we don't have because of staff transitions, because of changes in administrations, because public schools have moved or closed and reopened. Charter schools are appearing and leaving, and so we don't have as good a relationship with the public school system and other stakeholders sponsoring youth transportation as we may have had at one time. And one of the realizations that that you and I came to was that we really don't have a focal point within Metrobus for a person to make sure that we know who the principal is at any given school that we serve, that we introduce the service managers to the folks that are monitoring the loading of students in the afternoon, that we make sure that that any reported issues of bullying or of ill behavior get reported and addressed, that partner with parent-teacher associations and other agencies and non-governmental organizations as well as nonprofit organizations that can help make folks be aware of what it means to ride on a Metro bus and what it means, what the expectations of behavior are. And to address all of these sorts of things before they become an issue that the police have to deal with. And our transit police work closely with the city's Metro Police Department to be aware of gang actions and student issues and, you know, all the police sort of things that go on. And they're a really good resource for us to, you know, deal with the problems that really escalate into totally unacceptable behavior. But as anyone who's the parent of a teenager knows, you know, there's things you want to do before it gets to the point of having to ground someone and take away the cell phone or other, you know, sorts of incentives. And we really want to be able to facilitate that. And so, in line with what Kelsey was saying earlier, sort of have a half-baked notion of what we need to do, and I'm coming to the RAC to ask for some assistance in helping us fully cook the idea to make sure that we're addressing the right issues, engaging the right stakeholders, and providing the right kind of direction and statement of support that we want to, because we really do want to encourage young people to use public transit. It's one of the reasons why we exist. It's for those who can't or don't drive or can't drive to be able to get around the community. Also to facilitate those who are financially challenged or just need a cheap ride to work and to activities. And we want to encourage, you know, good transit behaviors because, you know, once you've got a customer for life, it's good for us in the future. So a lot of good reasons. I forget, 6 or 8 years ago, when I worked with Arlington County, we created a youth initiative for transit, focused on transit, encouraging transit ridership at the high schools and the middle schools that that the county has. And that program's been going on quietly for a number of years with good results. So I think there's some good models there. There's some good models up in Montgomery County. George's has recently had some student initiatives. Of course, the district has got lots of different things going on in a very positive sense of throughout the community. And so I'd like to figure out a way to tap into that and to position ourselves appropriately. So in your package is sort of the summary statement of what the proposal is, some background information, and some ridership data that I won't go into specifically. But so in addition, from the staff standpoint, there's also the possibility of trying to create a student advisory group or some way to be able to encourage youth in the community to contribute to the input of our planning activities, making sure that our service planning is reflecting the needs that youth have, which are oftentimes different than the traditional commute population or folks that have to work a regular job. And at the Ward 7 Transportation Task Force, there was a young gentleman that stood up and made a presentation. He was stopped at 24 items that he was recommending, but he had a much longer list of really good and well-founded suggestions for us to consider. And so there's a wealth of knowledge out there, and we just need to find ways to tap into it in ways that are effective and efficient to support the process. So with that, I'm happy to answer questions and take your guidance as to what sorts of things we should be looking at doing.
Okay, and just so I'm clear, you'd like any comments on what you just presented, as well as these three proposals at the bottom half of the page, party proposal description and request, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So, the first thing I have is, I think that this is a really critical item to address, and I worry about it every day pretty much when I ride in Metro, because I look at it as a safety issue for our younger riders. I don't think so much about the contact, because the contact is bad. I just think of these are young people who are trying to get to school or a part-time job or wherever they need to go, and they should be safe and feel as if Metro is a place they should safely go to get wherever they need to go. So the first thing I want to say is I support the idea of a youth transportation coordinator. I think someone that is a liaison between the public school systems, be it Maryland, Virginia, or DC, and WMATA would be extremely beneficial to get everyone on the same page. One of the things that I worry about is that when I'm riding the bus, I'm stuck on the bus for an hour instead of my normal 20 minutes, and there are 15 other kids stuck on that bus with me. And the first thing I'm thinking of is, well, I have a director I can call and say I'm late. But do these kids have a teacher that they can call, or they just need to relax? And then if someone is of a sneaky nature, are they just going to get to school and say my bus was late? Because it's an easy convenient for you to say, and how does that teacher validate or confirm, yes, this bus was late, so maybe I don't write them this right today. So I feel like that coordinator position could address some of this.
Yeah, that was something that the principal at Deal Middle School brought to our attention, is that a bus would show up late with 20 kids on it, but by the time it got to the door, there would be 45 kids on home who had just gotten off of that bus, and that's why they were late coming in the door. And in that case, we ended up actually pushing the schedule back, I forget, 10 minutes, so the bus would arrive in plenty of time for kids, because they now have to go through metal detectors and security screening to get in the building, so it's not just show up and run inside, you've got to actually be able to process the kids and stagger the arrivals, and it seemed to be working very well for the last half of the year. And this was a good indicator of the value of actually sitting down and talking with the school administrators.
Joseph, Ben, and then
Jim, I really want to appreciate you, everyone. I think that you have really done what we wanted you to do with involvement in this, but especially in this area. Where my concern is, well, before I even start, behind you is a gentleman, and this woman. He's the director of the Managed Youth Leadership Institute here in D.C. And so I know you were talking about engaging stakeholders and in this discussion and things like that. He is a great resource, and he's been advocating and you have for a long time, so I hope that you would be kind of tricky.
He's the guy that made the presentation.
I think it's now let me go to my concern. My concern with a lot of what you said and a lot of what I hear a lot even at this meeting is as a person who is already a member of a teenage boy, as an educator or someone who's educating my life to young people, how we think of young people. And there's no way that you can ever tell me that 8% of our daily riders is the cause of the majority of our problems in the system. We just can't prevent it. But however, when people talk about crime and disorderly, whatever on the system, people turn to young people. And that's not the case. And so what I would hope that what we will do, and I think that we will do this, and I think that your position that you want to create will do this, is look at young people as not a problem to be solved or a solution to a problem. And because that is what they are. And so I hope that we will start to look at young people. Let me tell you what I said before, and I don't know if this is what you said, but I'll say anyway, is that we have a lot of issues on our measure system. And a lot of times there's no politically correct way to describe those issues. You can't say it's those black people who ride the metro. Well, you can, but you won't keep a job if you said that. You can't say that, but we can say, well, it's those young people. We have a lot of young people, and it's them. And so what I hope that what we will start to determine is that there are young people in our community. The majority of them are in our system, they use it well. There are some people, young and old, who use our system and do not use it correctly. And we need to look at how we build those people and not look at those people behind the stage. And so that's my issue. And I think that when we go and talk to young people, it's important that not only we can say those things, but that we take them out of our heads so that we can look at them and talk to them and we've opened the world. And I think it was the same way I did in the presentation, that 24 points that we thought about is our way that we can engage their community. I'm only 26, but I try to still hang like that community as much as possible and having them positively use the system.
Well, thank you. I don't want in any way to infer that students are the majority of issues or that there aren't, 90% of the kids just on the bus doing what they're supposed to do every day, and I want to find the right way language to use to suggest how we want to enforce and re-encourage folks to take full advantage of us, because you're right. That's why, and to your point about there's a lot of other sources of problems on the system, that's why we're getting 32 new police officers assigned specifically to Metrobus so that we can expand their presence to address those other elements. But I do want to make sure that we have ways of appropriately addressing concerns, questions of youth, because we don't want it to become a police level issue. So the successful programs that other major cities transit operators, you know, have a combination of resources. That's what we're trying to find.
Great. So we've got about 7 minutes, and I see four that are coming. So Ben and then Carol.
Thanks again for coming to see us. I ride the beach buses every morning, which terminated at Wilson High School and the old junior high and St. James is also there. I find that the kids who ride the bus are actually quite well behaved, at least in the morning. But in general, they do quite well. But what I have noticed over the last year or so is that the bus, there's a D32, which is supposed to pick up most of the kids along the way, doesn't get those kids because it doesn't come at the right time. And for that reason, most of the kids are riding the regular H buses instead of the bus that is supposed to get them. So that suggests to me that it's more of, it's not a sociological issue, it's more of a scheduling issue. And one thought that I would have in terms of your suggestions here is to conduct a ridership survey, just like you do on the other lines. And the advantage of that is that you have a semi-captive audience, if you will, that could make that survey quite significant. And then you could go to the schools and tap into the opinions of these kids and where they are. So I don't know, I guess I'd encourage you to approach it as much from an economic standpoint as from a sociological standpoint.
No, it's a combination of both, because especially in the morning, we tend to see, although we'll schedule four buses to go the same route so that you get even. That last bus always has more people, so it's kids legislating just as much as the rest of us do, and they always forget the last one. And how you make sure that they're using the right bus is part of it, and that's education, that's involvement and identifying what time the bus should be, and engaging parents as well.
Any more comments? Carol?
I kind of like you saying that I think that you do need to provide some expertise, and I think that what Metro needs to consider is perhaps contracting with a consulting with a firm that has expertise in dealing with youth of this age, because I, like Joseph, almost feel like some of this is code. We're talking about a certain population, but we don't come right out and say it. I mean, quite frankly, I find it kind of disgusting that on Friday nights, I have stepped in vomit from students who don't look like the people that I think we're really talking about. You know, like at Catholic University, GW, University of Maryland, Howard, Trinity, et cetera, because I run those ones. I'm concerned about the fact that we seem to default almost immediately. For example, when we talk about the youth coordinator, we talk about the first thing we talk about is the in connection with the transit police, local police, and related agencies and stakeholders. Somebody needs to take a look at this and really take out those kind of negative stereotypes and perceptions that seem to be just rampant throughout the document. And I don't think, you know, I think it's easy to be called a kid. You know, I'm old, I don't want to get on the bus with kids and make a whole lot of noise, you know. But I think you have to take a look back and find out what that's all about. And I would like to see this kind of flip. Look at it as a marketing campaign for Metro riders of the future. That's what we ought to really be looking at, especially in the District of Columbia, because the District of Columbia is unique. It's not like the surrounding jurisdictions. Metro is the bus system, the school bus system for the District of Columbia. So I think you could mount a positive marketing campaign that involves the students. I like that very much. And the police should not be the first line of interaction and collaboration.
Thanks.
There are some specific plans related to the bus services around Gallaudet University. I know that we have developed some responses there. I don't know that that information is widespread, and so that might also be a component of this effort, is to make sure that the information gets widely distributed so that it's available when and where it's needed.
Okay, thank you. I want to be informed with Jim, please make sure that this individual who is selected for the youth transportation coordinator knows how to interact with the transit police and the local police effectively. Police officers, and I've talked to them a lot, have a different mindset on a lot of different things. Some of their mindset for a youth are very inaccurate, but with a little education, they can be brought to speak as to what's really wrong with that youth and teach them how to assist. So please make sure that this individual knows how to educate as well as positively interact with the police agents.
Thank you.
Just a quick clarify, are the 32 additional officers you expect on your metro buses, are they uniform, undercover?
Well, there'll be sworn officers. How they get deployed will be subject to Deputy Chief Dolinsky's, manpower.
You'll have undercover folks right now.
Right now we have about 12, I think, undercover officers.
Okay. So this is likely going to be in there without speculating.
Yeah, I think it's going to be more uniformed than ununiformed just because of the strategies of the high-intensity targeted enforcement program that the transit police has created to try and make their presence known throughout the system. But a key part is also having the ability to be on the bus and observe what's going on without having influenced it by having the uniform and the badge sitting in the back seat.
Great, thanks.
So again, thank you for coming to speak with us tonight. I think you gave a lot of good feedback, and I think that this is an effort that has to be approached in a sensitive manner, and I think that we're trying to help you as best as we can to get it and get it right. And so I appreciate you for coming, and some of the comments, were a little tough or a little blunt. Sometimes that's the only way
some messages can be conveyed. All right, we look forward to working with you, and please feel free to edit the documents and suggest ways to describe what it is we need. This is a collaborative effort, and I don't want to misrepresent just because we're trying to draft something quickly.
No, and I think we recognize that you're trying to, get additional resources into that segment of the population that rides them to support them.
Yeah, that's up. It's over 3 million riders a year just for our sponsor ridership. So it's equivalent to bike ride ridership over in Virginia or probably the H line here in the district in terms of just to give yourself a concept of how many youth there are riding in the system. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
And now we'll have a youth working update from Joseph.
I will send you a list of contact schools that I'm used to hearing of you here, and you can do reach out to them, talk to them in whatever way that you think is appropriate.
Sure.
So on page 16 of your packet, if you all remember, a few months ago we started talking about the Ward 7 Transportation Summit that Kelsey went to, and where she heard the presentation about young people and their perception of Metro and increasing their voice in throughout the system. And so after that, we decided that we would talk about, we and the group would talk about and explore ways to support those initiatives going forward. And so what I've been doing for the last 2 months is I've talk to you about talking to a lot of people who I believe youth-led organizations and programs here in the district, Prince George's County, Montgomery County, not really Virginia, and we're thinking of being about the people in Virginia, but I think what I, after our meeting, after my last meeting with the Mayor of the Youth Leadership Institute, and for those of you who don't know about what the Mayor of the Youth Leadership Institute is, it's an organization in DC that is supported by the DC government that supports youth leadership initiatives in the city. And so there's the mayor, there's the city council, and a lot of, and they do a lot of programs to support youth for themselves, to advocate for themselves. And so after my last meeting with them and the director of the Ward 7, the director of the Ward 7 Transportation Summit. I think it will be best, as opposed to meeting with all these different people and trying to come up with a plan that everyone will support and then we support and then we advocate for here at Metro. What we talked about was this summer creating a, hosting a youth transportation town hall and inviting young people from throughout the entire region to come to the camp hall and talk about issues concerning transportation, their issues with Metro, Veronica has the best mind for this. Talk about their issues, their proposals for solutions, and how they can have faith in seeing those solutions through. And so I thought that was a great idea, and I think that that's the best way to get different voices all in one room who are these people who we're talking about, and having these young people decide what type of voice that they collectively feel that they should have in Metro, what issues that they have with Metro, and having them come up with a framework of what that would look like, and then talking about that afterwards here at the RAC, and hopefully supporting that and helping them advocate for that here at the RAC, here at Metro. Because what has happened for the last few years is that this issue of a youth advisory council has been talked about here in Metro for a long time. And no one actually does anything to talk about it, and then we don't talk about it anymore. So this, I think, will get some movement behind it. So that is this memo here. According to, I'll just give you some brief outlines on it. This event will probably take place in July. The Mayor's Youth Leadership Institute has agreed to help us organize and sponsor this at Howard University at spaces that they will already have. And then we would invite young people, youth organizations from across the region, as well as Metro staff, representatives, and then have basically a great conversation. And then afterwards, our goal should be to develop a framework of what they believe a new voice in Metro should be. I think I put that as much as I can. Let me know how. I'm more than happy to answer any questions. And look there. James.
No, I have no questions.
Deb.
It will be open to random young person as well. who is not affiliated with any of the agencies, still wants to be involved. Okay, has been quite a lot of pain.
I responded. I'm just wondering what you see as the role of the RAC in this. Is this something that you could be talking to us? Would they be talking to themselves and maybe they're listening? What's your supervision of that?
So, to jump in, that's my question as well. What would be the deliverable? I agree with you, is one of the initiatives the RAC wants to work on, but we have this town hall and it's going to be very productive. What would be the deliverable to the board to improve the experience of the youth taking that?
So what we currently have here, what we've been talking about is, well, let's give them the environment council. That's what we and everyone our family will give them. And that's not really just us in this room, but you know, everyone has got more than a son. But in the presentation talking about a desire that some young people have wanting a youth environment council. Well, that we haven't shared that idea with other young people outside of who they may have shared with. So the idea with this town hall is to have a big conversation with young people about, in general, from all across the region, about what type of voice they would like to have. So what is the deliverable afterwards? The deliverable afterwards is to use that conversation that is already in that room to create a framework for whatever representation that they think they do on that. And I'll tell you why. I'll tell you what I mean by that. Is that after that conversation, the young people in the room may say, we want to have a youth advisory council. And a youth advisory council should be established to look like this. It should be established to have people from different parts of the region, and this is how they should get there, and things like that. That could be one of them. So it can actually be an actual portal that the board can actually consider. Because right now, when you talk to board members about it, it's just a theme. It's just a thing. They have no proposal. It's just a thing. So as long as there's no thing, they have nothing to respond to. Or it could be that the young people say, well, we don't think that we need that advisory council. We maybe need to have like quarterly summits like this, where more metro people have to come in front of us and we can ask them questions and get answers from like the DC City Council does, or every month. Young people in the city are invited to go down and the chair of the city council and the mayor and things like that. They go down and they ask them all these different questions about what issues they have. So I think the deliverable out of this is to develop a framework that young people across the region believe will adequately represent them in their voice.
And again, what do you see as our...
I'm sorry, that's a healthy question, and I really don't. Our role in this is just to be supportive about it. So our role should be to help get them get the members back that they need to the event. This is space. So we don't need to do anything as far as like, securing the space, because this is space that the Mayor's Leadership Institute, when I met with them, they already have at Howard University.
But do you see us as moderating the conversation or being spoken
to? I get your point.
I don't know, maybe just taking notes as they talk to themselves.
So can I go out and
idea? Yeah.
I think the way I envision this, based off of what I've heard from others and people in the community, I think that it might remove and help the RAC and help the youth if we have a RAC-sponsored town hall where the youth can come to us and have a large youth contingent come speak to us about what it is they need. And I think we have set up maybe 5 very pointed questions. How do you feel about listening to you? How do you communicate to Vermont about what you want? And then we maybe together, working with some of the stakeholders that attend, put together some type of a one-page fact sheet, well, not fact sheet, but a recommendation back to them about this is what we heard, this is what we think. We think where do you want to go, and this is what the RAC is maybe supportive of, or if you want to take the next step and engage with this group of projects. Or not.
I don't know, I think I'm still listening to what you say. I think though, let me put it this way. I would back away from the RAC sponsor than anything. I think that what we really need to do here is allow young people themselves to say what they want. And so that's my one pushback on what Kelsey said. Is Kelsey's idea is that me, you know, I'm not just a principal, and one of the things that I've always learned from young people is to allow them open. So if we go in with these 5 questions, we have defined what they want. We define the parameters of what they're going to talk about. and that may not be what they want to talk about.
We, as a RAC, are appointed by members of the board to reflect all privates. And so I hear what you're saying, but I think this is a form that either has to be sponsored by the RAC, or we maybe have to take another approach or take a back seat. Because we're the RAC and we're here to listen to everyone, and I thought the town hall, and I could be wrong, was taking additional comments in, was for us to be that media, that conduit, that train, to get that message from that group to the board, and then figure out what needs to happen. So the RAC we need to determine, and maybe it's not tonight, but we need to determine what the role of the RAC will be and make sure that everyone will, because I thought it was going to be a RAC sponsor.
Well, I think it can be whatever it wants to be. You can call it RAC sponsor or whatever. I think the point, however, is this is the point that, this is the pushback that I have on this, is that it shouldn't be our meeting. That's my point. It's not our meeting, because we're not them. So it is our meeting, and we decide what the questions are. We decide what the deliverable will be, and we decide what the outcome will be. Then it's not, then we should just do it here tonight. And there's no point to have them. And so if so I get your point. I definitely get your point. But I think what we need to do, and what I hope that we would do, and what I would be supportive of us doing, is we can have the town hall that you are talking about. I think that is great. But I think what we need to have first is the open discussion where the young people just talk. Because we haven't heard from them at all yet. And so if we go down this avenue, if we've already decided kind of where we're gonna go. And we're just putting them on the line, we're just putting them on the bus to go with them.
We're actually over
time already, but please let's give this about 5 minutes. Oh,
I'm
yes, that's it. I'm fine with Carl Candace and Victoria. I just think my suggestion would be to make sure, while I think having it focus on you, that driving the discussion, I don't think that should preclude us from inviting non-youth to participate. Because we have youth comments here, even though there's not a youth member of our council. So there's probably a lot of people that should be also with others. I certainly hear your concerns about it being like apps for a quote unquote adult centered solution, whatever that may be. But I think that there's probably no ground where productive discussion can be had with everyone.
I just wanted to say, I know that we have a young man here tonight. We have a young man and gave a suggestion last time. I think that when it comes to a town hall, it's not a set agenda. And I don't know if it could be somebody that maybe works in conjunction with him.
They're not going to just walk into the room and say, let's talk about it. Both Norman and then the other representatives, there are activities that you do with young people to elicit feedback that will give them in the safe space that they feel, that they can give the responses that you want them to give. And then you use those responses to fill in your answers to the deliverables, as opposed to this kind of this questionnaire, this kind of this questionnaire.
So two more comments, and then I think what we want to do next is to either voice our approval of having set the town hall or not, and working out the specific later on.
Sorry, I just have one more quick question. How involved are the bus operators in these discussions? Because I'm sure that they have
the national
bus operators. Because they see what goes on a day-to-day basis, they see what issues may be. Like, I guess I just want to know, like, you're talking about all these different things when it comes to you. What have they seen as a problem? What are their concerns? For example, on 14th Street, you have a lot of people that drive up and down 14th Street. You know, it might be helpful to maybe talk to some of them leading up to this town hall to see what their concerns may be also.
Or am I going to do that?
Or am I going
to do that? Because we think, hey, I do love you right now.
Victoria, thank you.
Thank you. I think your comment helped explain that to me. That was a lot of time. So is your idea to, I guess I'm wondering, are there a few standout youth leaders you're going to have kind of at the forefront of the meeting, organizing, going along? I'm not really really sure. I have a correct issue that I have my personal result behind them, but it sounds like you want the youth completely organized.
They're not organizing the meeting. The point is that they're not organizing the meeting. We know that the mayor's youth leadership I will be there to help as well. Anybody there who wants to join can help as well. But what it should not be is we sit at the table, you and I, and then make what you want. That's not how young people will respond in the best way. It's just not. As some of you have worked in this field my entire life, it won't give you what you want. It will get us what they want, but it won't give them what they want.
Right. So the Youth Leadership Institute is—they're not just giving the space; they're actually going to be on the organizing meeting too.
I mean, it will be similar to what we do with all of our hearings. With all of our hearings, we have all of our town halls, and the few that we've had is that we work in conjunction with Metro staff to put on the event, and so we will work in conjunction with. If we do this, we'll work in conjunction with the Mayor's Youth Leadership Institute. With that, I'm one of your friends from right now, with Norman Goodwin, but with all of the other youth organizations and their adults who do that who have expertise in this area.
Carol? I think the back should bring the snacks and do the dishes and take out the trash. Meaning, seriously, I have seen youth-led meetings like this, and they can be very powerful, and there are people who are trained, a little bit maybe older than the youth population, maybe people in their 20s, who are trained to do this. I've been to some things that are really good events. I think we ought to, perhaps to satisfy people in this group, the consensus around here is, I think we should have a little planning group, maybe people feel passionately about this, working with Joseph and working with the leadership, the Mayor's Leadership Institute, and come out with a proposal. And to answer Ben's question, I would like to see the youth tell us what they want us to do, which is why I'm saying you ought to bring the snacks and wash the dishes and take out the trash. I think that youth are capable, if mentored, I guess, or coached, which is the word I would use, of doing this. I think it would be great.
So, Joseph, what do you need from the
rabbit
at this point to go forward? Do you want to go forward and together an outline of how this
would
work, and then get our
full
board? Do you want to take a vote tonight, saying go forward, and then come back to
us? I think that we should go forward with it. If some people have hesitations, I definitely understand that. I think that those are very real concerns. But you're not saying, and we've had the conversation before about other issues that we want to talk about. When we had a public safety conversation, we didn't come to the right meeting and plan the agenda at the right meeting. That's not what we did. What we did was, we said, those people are the public safety workers. We're going to tell you we want to have a hearing. Go plan the hearing. And that's what they did.
Well, let me ask the group as a whole, though. First, before we do this, do we need Joseph to provide us with more information, the working group to get together and provide us with the framework of the meeting, and then you vote on it, say, the first meeting in July? Or do we vote on this tonight with an understanding that he will come back to us with additional details about how this meeting will be facilitated?
Vote.
Vote tonight? Okay. I have enough time.
Do you even know if the meeting can actually happen in July?
It can happen in July.
The institute told you this conclusion?
Yes.
Okay.
I
move that the RAC sponsor a youth town hall in the summer of 2011, provided that.
Oh, 2012.
Yeah. Provided that the youth working keep members of the RAC abreast via email and other communication means about how the meeting will be facilitated and the deliverables that will be. That the RAC can then present to the board.
That does happen.
Thank you very much.
That's it.
take a vote, or is it over discussion?
Okay.
All in favor? Raise your hand. Any opposed? Any abstaining?
I would love to have other people who would like to be interested in hiring, I don't know, you know. And I'm not sure, but I would love to have other people that
So we're actually running about 10 minutes behind, so I want to make sure that we get to everything. So next up, we have working group updates, web accessibility, Frank.
This is a working group that we established at the last meeting based on Mr. Hamry and Mr. O'Keefe's presentation about bus accessibility. Over the past month, we worked on getting a presentation, which we're going to, which we just confirmed today, will be next Tuesday, June 12th, 6:30 in this room, with
Al Hines.
Al Hines. On the New Freedom Grant, which is a federal grant administered by COG about accessibility. And Patrick would invite the AAC members to that as well, if they would like to participate, as well as members of the public. Committee meetings are a good time when public involvement in discussion is a lot.
Great. Thanks. So please talk to Frank or John if you're able to attend next Tuesday. Mm-hmm. All right, our next working group update is Ben for airport accessibility.
Yes. We did not have a meeting this month. We tried to set up a meeting, but it's been quite difficult to get a meeting with the Metro Washington Airports Authority. They came back to us last week and suggested that we come out to Dulles Airport on a weekly evening.
I'll take the blame for suggesting that we go to Dulles Airport since the group is looking at ways of getting to Dulles Airport.
There are plenty of logical reasons why we would go there, but it's just the timing of that day. So I know that John was going to go back to them trying to get maybe a meeting at National Airport instead, another airport authority location that's a lot more accessible for most/all of us. John, any updates on that?
No updates, but I mean, I don't know if you all wanted to talk about dates the week of the 18th that we could go back to them with, or that I could go back to them.
Yeah, is there any times that, I would say that we would just do a Wednesday, just because that's when we have this meeting. Any other dates anyone wants to throw out there? Okay. Seeing none, I guess we'll go with Wednesday, try for the week the 18th, and try to get it as close in as possible, either at National Airport, here at Metro Headquarters, or somewhere else.
Via Metro Station.
Even there, somewhere that is Metro accessible. So, anyway, we are trying to regain our momentum there a little bit. Once this meeting takes place, I believe that the other meeting we'll probably be able to do by teleconference, actually. So hopefully that will allow some more of us to do what I think.
Great. And we have an update from Carl on the emergency response.
Just very short, we're continuing to move forward on getting this set up as we're ready to do that time, and we should have details soon. What did you say, John?
I think so. I think some board members would like to weigh in. In addition to the board chair, I think she's also reached out to some of her colleagues. So,
here I'm looking at emergency communication.
All right, next item is bus stop consolidation meeting. Carol?
My report is really on page 17 and 18. You've read a lot of it. So I will just simply say, first of all, I'll say this to Jim. Your staff member, Mr. Brandon, did an excellent job at both meetings and the presentation. And he was, he had pretty broad shoulders because there were people here to meet him up. The sessions both were very poorly attended by my count. When you subtract the people who have to be there in terms of the Metro staff and some of the Department of Transportation and representative from one agency commissioner and a person from the office of aging in the District of Columbia. I figured there were eight people between the two of the three meetings. I would say this is what I learned from that meeting and just looking at some other things. I think that Metro needs to consolidate meetings. For example, some of the issues that were brought up at that meeting would have been able to be further illuminated if there could have been more conversation about the Freedom Grant. So I'm suggesting that Metro look at, you know, a schedule of hearings and see where they can be collapsed, as well as, you know, some of the ideas I have about outreach that I put in my report. The other thing that I think is really necessary is that there was good outreach. ANC's council members were all notified, but people just didn't respond because it wasn't an imminent danger. You know, if you called a meeting and said, you know, we're going to take away the stuff that's been there in front of your favorite store, we would probably have a good turnout. And the final suggestion that I make is that there were people who came to both meetings who took up a fair amount of airtime with specific complaints that had nothing to do about the proposed consolidation of bus stops. So I'm suggesting, and I suggested this to Will Browning, that we have a public comment for an open mic period, even in a meeting that's called for a specific event, because you know people are going to talk about it anyway, so you might as well allot time for them to talk about it and then move on to the business of the meeting. Thanks.
Carol,
I didn't mind the
7,
but I'm
going to
try to do that.
Thanks, Carol, for attending the meeting. Yes, that's the question. Carol, Arjun, maybe I can answer. It's just looking at my mind right now. I know you guys had the meeting on consolidation. When are these approved to start actually happening?
Oh, I see. And drive bus stops every day, so our normal processes are ongoing. But to respond specifically to the lines that were taken to these meetings, because of the poor turnout and because of some changes anticipated in the near term in terms of Title VI assessment or ability to assess the impact of bus stop reductions as part of an organized approach, we've decided to slow the process down so that we can work with other offices in the agency here to try and figure out how to get more interaction with the public, short of going and saying, putting up a sign saying, next Tuesday this stop disappears, come talk to me, which is what we did last time. And we got a really good response last time. This time we tried proactively to say, you know, we're going to consider, come talk to us. We got three people at one meeting and two at another.
It was
very disappointing versus the effort of notification. And I think that there's a lesson to be learned, and we're still trying to figure it out. And I'd like to talk with you more about your interpretations and what you take away. But the answer to your question is, there isn't a definitive date. We're just going to continue to work the process and make sure folks are aware of what's going on and continue business as usual.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just a quick question.
And
I think I know in your report you said that, you know, the time that basically you got a large number of responses is when you put up signage saying, you know, this bus stop may be eliminated. I know that you don't want to do that, but that may be the best way to get a response. Do you think you're not maybe doing that again?
Well, you know, this is always that dichotomy. Do you go to people before you have a list, or do you put out the list for people to respond to? Actually, both of these lines had a corridor development study that had a list that was recommended. We didn't want to just come up and say, well, here's the answer, here's what we're going after, now let's talk. Because we wanted to be more perceived as being more open. Personally, I think we have to go out with a list before we get an actual focused conversation with those that are most impacted. But, you know, we're trying different techniques to see what works, and the same answer may be different. I mean, the answer may be different in different parts of the region also.
I would say I don't agree. A lot of times I don't pay attention until there's something like sort of, oh my goodness, this is maybe about to happen. Like, if my bus stop were about to be eliminated, I don't know, I may not pay attention, but I have to walk two blocks more to the next bus stop. So sometimes you sort of, I guess, have to maybe give people a little push to make them realize that maybe it's not living.
And also it gets into such the details that it's really not worth, people don't perceive it as worth their time and effort up front, because it may not bother me, so why spend the time on it? Sort of like, you know, with Procter & Gamble, you don't want to know how they make the soap, you just want it to work. And I think a lot of times people just expect, I don't want the details, just make the bus show up on time and make sure I can get on and off exactly where I want to.
So we are actually running a little bit late, so I'm going to go on to the next agenda item. I'm going to give my report in a minute. Pat, I hope you can give your report in a minute. Okay. The report to the board is on the May draft report to the board is on page 19 of our packet. I think the report, I think it was received quite well. I believe I shared with you all some of the comments that some of the members made. I again want to take the time to thank you for the work that you did on the communication letter and the proposal. I think that proposal and that letter being at least recognized or referred to in both the Washington Post and TVD said something about hitting a nerve about our rising public and others seeing it as important to spark a broader discussion with additional comments and thoughts and questions. So it says to me that we're going in the right direction and the initiative we're choosing to work on, and based off of the response of the board members, with the type of deliverable we're giving to them. There's always room for improvement, and we will do that. But I think on our first deliverable to the board, I'm very pleased, and I think the leadership team is very pleased with what we've done. So again, thanks, all. Pat?
Thanks. I don't know if there are any questions on my report, but one or two things, most of which you've seen tonight. Sponsored card, the program is rolling that out. As I said, there's from the disability community, the low income portion of that community has some concerns. I think they're being addressed, so we appreciated the discussion tonight. We had a similar discussion yesterday with GM. The second part of our meeting, and a large part of our meeting, dealt with the Fair Calculator that is going to be introduced in July. What we want to see as far as improvements to the Fair Calculator, I think what it represents is a lower fare for mental access users. Implementing that Fair Calculator is going to take a while, and that's what we're working with Vermont to see what a while is, how it will be implemented, and what the impact on the system as far as sustainment goes is something that AAC is going to track through its various subcommittees.
Great. And so our next agenda item is actually rack outreach. And it looks like I just want to warn you ahead of time. We will probably go over about 5 minutes tonight. Those who have to leave early again, I totally understand. Please go ahead and do so. But the next agenda item is rack outreach. And this came upon us because as we are making recommendations to the board and the staff about how they can improve communication and get greater public involvement, I think we all recognize that it's important that the RAC looks at how we get greater public involvement, or if we should get additional public involvement. And the leadership team, we actually have, we already have two a few things. I have worked with Ms. Bowersox, who is the communications chair, is that correct?
She's now the assistant general manager for communications, customer service, and marketing,
okay.
As of last week.
We sent her a letter on behalf of the RAC asking for some simple, but we think effective ways to announce the RAC meetings, sending a tweet out on the RAC, on the Lamada Twitter account, including on the Lamada website, a banner that announces our meetings. So little simple fixes that have not been done before, but that we're hoping lead to additional recognition. In fact, they have someone there in the off the street. It is a long story. But anyway, she actually saw the banner on the website. She said, I could make the meeting tonight, but I was happy to see it on the website, and I had no idea you all existed, so I invited her to come to the next meeting. And so that's why we're talking about this. So Joseph actually sent around a proposal earlier today, and we've got a lot of feedback from it already. I don't think this is a discussion we're going to be able to wrap up tonight, but I think it's one that, I don't think we should be able to wrap up tonight, but it's one that I want to start and figure out what do we need to do next.
As Kelsey explained, I emailed a proposal. We have been talking about this parallel study. It's the first person you mentioned it needs to do better at our meeting to engage in public. We've been talking about this. I sent around my proposal, my best proposal, about how I think we can do that. And I got some responses from a lot of you all with great ideas and great thoughts about what we should do. For those of you who didn't have enough time to read it, I know it's pretty long. The proposal is basically two things. It's to, it's a year old, basically, is to continue allowing public comment at the beginning of our meeting on non-agenda items that are not on our agenda, and then allow public comment on all of our agenda items at the time of that item, at the time that that item is being discussed. The first option is that the benefit was if we do that, that we would ask people to sign in, so that the chair would be able to get a sense of how many people want to see one specific agenda item, so that we can be very aware of how long that may take. And then also that would allow us to get their information, and if we need to follow up with something that they raised, we're able to do that. The second option is to still take public comment on every agenda item as we consider the agenda item without a requirement that people pre-register. That being said, I think there was a great conversation had that I didn't think about, and that was allowing public comment on presentations. Not necessarily all of their items, but presentations. And I know that there was, I don't think I ever really answered Carl's question, but my answer here is public comment being allowing people to comment on what they see in the presentation, what they think about the presentation. Maybe they can ask questions, if they would like to ask questions, and then we would respond to that comment at the end of all public comment. So those are my thoughts on that. Kelsey wanted me to mention that I have for about 7 years written my own personal blog, and so I posted this comment, this proposal on my blog that I've always done since I've been a member of this body. And so I did receive comments on that from people of the public and via Twitter, from people of the public of those thoughts. I think that those thoughts, they run the gamut of yes, we think that that's great, or no, we don't think that that's great. A lot of people wanted us to look into what the AAC did in order to run their meetings and look at public comment at their meetings. I attended an AAC meeting. I know Carol has now. I know that John has, and John also spoke to members of the director of the staff program of the AAC. So I think that this proposal does what I believe we should do to respond to that concern. So, the last thing I will say, I spoke to Kelsey about this beforehand. I wanted to present this at this meeting. I think that people need time to think about it and get other ideas and do other research about the best way. So, I'm not going to ask anyone to vote on this tonight. That's all I have to say.
And in addition to Joe's proposal, there were a number of other proposals from other RAC members that I think everyone probably saw. One of the things that I want us to be mindful of is I want us to know that I think most of us, if not all, want greater public involvement and input. I think it's just finding it, or identifying the way they can be done as complementary to the workload that we currently have and what we have to do. As you can see tonight, we had two presentations and we barely had enough time to answer all the questions that we ourselves had. So I'd like for us to be careful and to be cautious with whatever proposal we come up with, and maybe it's something that we take one small step at a time instead of going big, so to speak, for right now. but I'd also encourage you to talk to others in your community to see what they might find useful, and let's look at that practice from other groups. But let's remember that we are the RAC, and at the end of the day, we have to do what is best for the RAC, while we've been looking to other groups to come to the best for us.
I do think we face a time crunch, which kind of goes to the point that Caroline debated back in the day when we were looking at our filings, which is perhaps this body, there are enough important issues that we should meet more than once a month. Aside from that debate that I suspect will come back up, I do think that there's nothing wrong with allowing public comment and questions tied to each agenda item, keeping the comment period generally, and then people would like to ask questions or comments. At the end of the presentations or in the items, I think this would be fine. I also don't know that, it's my opinion at least that we don't need to slow roll this out. I don't know that, the change is going to be that drastic that it requires a significant amount of time to find best practices. It seems fairly simple to me, at least from my perspective.
I thought that Carol's comments on email today and Kelsey's outline were excellent. I think that both of those lists require greater reflection by RAC members and by members of the public. So, as I suggested on email, as I can suggest formally today, although I'm successfully a motion that we set up a committee to refine Joseph's proposal, which I think is an excellent proposal that needs some fleshing out, so that we have, a time in committee to hash our ideas and also to get some input from the public during that process, which is better done at convenience.
Okay, quickly, we'll have that, and then I'll
go. Okay, thanks. Just quickly, what I think a couple things that work through my meetings that we've held, and I see a lot happening here. One, getting recommendations, having the hard work on subcommittee levels, so recommendations get done. At the full committee level, I think is a good thing. That's helped streamline our recommendations and our meetings. But secondly, I think it's been when we've had individuals speaking, what we've had them do is we have staff who will be here, who will write down the questions get sent to the chair, written down already, and then we can answer those questions. What that does is that the public will get their questions answered without actually having to engage the them asking the question, then maybe follow up. So it seems to work very well. It gets the public to engage in presentations while the committee still has to do its business. So I'm very pleased with what we have. Of course, last time our meeting ran over 30 minutes, but aside from that, I screwed up.
Patrick, I have to apologize. This is a matter of protocol. I never identified that I was there at your meeting.
Oh, you were?
Yes, I did. It was very interesting. But I would say this, that I think you would have to exercise a great deal of discipline. I mean, to be, excuse my back, but I guess the comments that people are referring to is I realized after last month's meeting, to be honest, I might have not have liked the way it was presented, but it really made me think about it. You know, here we are, and we're sort of having a kind of a wall between us and the public. And so I think we really do need to work on this. I think I think those rings out of a little small group kind of hash it out and then get back together as a whole. But one thing I would say is I think that it's not really fair to ask the staff to maybe make give answers, because the answers they might give on the fly where questions that are presented is not necessarily a well thought out and well staffed out answer. So it may be that the questions that are asked would be something that would have to be come back at the second meeting or be answered by email rather than
expect the staff to sort of engage in questions and answers and, during a meeting, and people all have had the benefit of getting the same information at the same time, so.
So is that a comment by both Joseph and Carl?
Well, I was going to say that I think that Frank's idea, of the committee, I think that is something that I would support. I would hope that that committee would report back to this body for next month's meeting, and we would make a decision at next month's meeting. I think that, everyone can do that, so I would like to, second, if you put a motion, I would accept your motion, and then, and hope and grant the committee to report back at next month's meeting.
I second Jared's comment, and we'll just ask whatever the proposal that has come up with the meeting, if you're early in the meeting, so as to, execute it or implement it with more appropriate words, over the course of the next meeting. And as with all things, we can refine, over time, but I think moving forward, is a good idea, just because we should be able to hash things out under Frank's excellent leadership and his work in the room.
Any other comments? If not, we can take a vote, because then we have to identify a working group leader. Okay, let's take a vote. Taking a vote, all in favor of the right forming a public outreach working group, please raise your hand. Any opposed?
All right.
Seeing none, I don't think I have any intentions. So, John, you can vote.
Good to go.
Okay. Now.
Can you call it public participation at meetings or in public outreach, something or establishment?
Public participation.
Or whatever.
Who would like to lead?
I think Frank will be great leader.
Be great.
I have business meeting that's taking me out of the country for 3.5 weeks.
Well, I will be meeting the first meeting, but I really think that we should have someone not in the leadership team, play a leadership role in it, but in order to get
I think somebody new.
Right, somebody new members. There you go.
So going on to the next agenda item is open mic community meetings. I only have actually one announcement to make, and that is I want to encourage you all again to go publicize monthly meetings and other special meetings to your networks, and also recognizing that July 4th, which would be the first Spring Day in July, which is going to be the holiday, so we're actually going to meet that next week, which is July 11th. So, I'm
going to
go around this way.
As soon as we read the Columbia Heights, there's a King Street line, Midwest Community, on Thursday the 21st, 5:30 to 7:30 at the Northern Division of the bus station.
6:30?
5:30 to 7:30.
It's a drop in at any point.
Okay, John, were you, the Freedom Grant email that you sent to me, is that meeting separate than from Frank's meeting about the Freedom Grant?
It's going to be the same topic. There is a meeting, as was mentioned during last month's discussion of bus stop accessibility, Metro has applied for and received a $1.25 million grant to improve certain bus stops. They convened a working group, I believe it was last month, to sort of set criteria, you know, come up with sort of rank bus stops, because obviously $1.25 million, while I would love to have it, is not going to fix all of the region's crummy bus stops. So they're trying to sort of figure out how to best leverage that money to get the most bang for the buck. There is a meeting of that group again, and I had emailed you all that it was today, and it's actually tomorrow from 1:30 to 3:30 in this very room. Al Hines, who is the sort of project lead, as a follow-up to the RACS discussion of bus of, you know, what Metro is doing with bus stops and improving their accessibility. We'll be coming on the 12th, as Frank mentioned, to sort of update about what's going on and what this group has decided in the process and et cetera.
Thanks, John. And the last thing that I was going to click on was going to say under outreach, and I'll just say it real quick, is that there have been some discussion, and it has been mentioned a lot, especially on Twitter, about the last outreach on Twitter, and that is a conversation that members of the leadership team have had with Metro, and it is something that it is a conversation that we are having with Metro. It's not as easy as the RAC just creating a Twitter account, so it is something that we have talked about.
And are continuing to talk about it and hopefully come to some sort of resolution.
Ben?
One thing that's coming up, hopefully in the next month, is a vote in Loudoun County about the Silver Line extension. And I just want to sort of flag that, especially to the Virginia members, as something that maybe the RAC should, it's too bad that we haven't really had a chance to put something proactive about that, but maybe something that you could react to positively or negatively, depending on how the vote goes, either at our next meeting or after that. One other issue that I'd just like to flag is something that I'd be interested in hearing about at some time in the future, is that WMATA is not just a transportation agency, it's also a large landowner. And one thing that's come up in several areas is the impact of selling or not selling land in the area. I'd be very interested to hear some sort of briefing from Metro about parcels of land that they own.
Ron?
I suspect other people know this too. The lead editorial in the Washington Post today was about tunnel evacuation, and apparently there's been some new study that indicates that Metro is falling down considerably on how we're going to evacuate the tunnels in an emergency. I'd like to hear a little bit more about that from the WMATA and exactly how they're responding. In fact, I think that was the bottom line of the Post editorial, is how are they going to respond? I'd be very interested to know how is Metro going to respond.
Okay,
I'm going to
add that
part of the presentation. James. Madam Chair, as you know, I'm one of the new members of the RAC, and I'm trying to find my voice and my purpose within this group, and I think it is evolving. Before I get to that, let me make a point that Ben made about the Silver Line. For the life of me, I don't understand a lot of folks. Some folks in Virginia would not want the Silver Line. It would be profitable to them. It would be political to the Santa Port. And, all this discussion about PLA and things like that, those things were made before the present governor was sworn in. Having said that, it looks like developed an interest in the public safety of Beaumont, particularly this weekend when you had, a few days ago, you had it at Southern Avenue. You know, it seems like Metro is attracting an element, a criminal element, and I think that providers have a right to be concerned about that. So I'm still working on how I'm going to work within the context of the RAC in terms of public safety. I'll get back to you on that. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. One way maybe with the emergency response hearing that we're trying to work with and possibly partner with the board on, so you might want to get a little and some of the others to figure out how you can test them. Okay. Lorraine?
Yes, there was a meeting today, but there's going to be another tomorrow on the Virginia streetcar proposal. So the Virginia members that are maybe interested, the meeting is tomorrow from 7 to 9 at Goodwood House, and that's on Thomas Jefferson Street. And this is in between Harrington and Fairfax, so it's tomorrow from 7 to 9.
Thanks. And I have to apologize. I have very poor manners. We have a new member, Barbara Harrison. Would you please, along with your comment that you want to make, would you please introduce yourself to us?
That was my only comment.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Barbara Hermanson,
and I've been listening tonight, this is about education, and the court just paid again, assignment for your committee, and I'm looking forward to staying, I probably won't be quite this quiet.
Thank you. Any other comments before I adjourn?
She's from Virginia, from Alexandria.
Hearing none, comments, I'm going to bring the case to a close.